Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 22nd, 2020, from my parents' house in James Island, specifically a closet in my room. Just so you know, some of this information in the podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a trip to the Isle of Palms ahead of Memorial Day weekend, a look at how some communities are planning on economic relief packages, the state reaches record unemployment, and a limited amount of the promising COVID-19 treatment remdesivir is being used in the state. These stories and more after we bring you the latest. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That's 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what life is like for you. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 419 deaths, and currently there are 9,638 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of May 22nd at 4 p.m. 429 hospital beds in the state are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. Some additional data. Barring a massive jump, our case count is set to be lower than last week. We'll know how much lower on Saturday. It's also possible that we'll have our lowest weekly deaths since early April. And as a reminder, 85% of the first 6,757 individuals for which DHEC has data on have recovered from COVID-19. So some more encouraging news right there, looking at the recovery rate. Did you catch how last weekend there were, a few people down at the beaches in the Charleston area, like Isle Palms, Folly Beach, and Sullivan's, where they're only allowed to walk on the beach? Well, South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen did, and now she takes us on a trip to a very, very crowded beach on Isle of Palms.
Even before the much-awaited Memorial Day weekend, once-vacated beaches have been crammed with incredible crowds.
And it's just really fun to get out again, you know?
People pent up from protecting themselves from a potentially deadly pandemic are now eager to drag that wagon of piled high beach supplies and get a little sand in their bathing suits. But on the Isle of Palms this past weekend, the beach near Charleston was so busy, traffic was slammed. Lined up for miles, like those perfectly planted palm trees, only, not so pretty.
It was just, we were overrun.
Jimmy Carroll is the mayor.
People came out in droves, droves that we'd never seen before in my 60-plus years of living on Isle Palms.
Mayor Carroll says the island's 1,500 parking spaces were filled, each car likely carrying several people, all wanting their own personal piece of 5 miles of pristine beach. What they got was plenty of company. The mayor says people did practice social distancing, but pictures of tents and bathing suit-clad bodies dotting the shore blew up on social media. Going to newly reopened beaches during a pandemic, it turns out, has become as divisive as deciding whether to wear a face mask. Some saw families safely enjoying themselves, others a petri dish. But Mayor Carroll says the coronavirus pandemic has exposed a pre-existing condition. Too many people, not enough parking. So he called an emergency council meeting on a Saturday night. The next day, he had additional police, more signs, overall more help.
We were planning for this weekend. It just came a week earlier.
So far, traffic has been better.
So I'm going to have you back in as close as you can to the pontoon boat. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Two full-time moms are taking a break from homeschooling to make a little extra cash. They're charging $20 a parking spot. Here's Courtney Stone.
Filled up in probably like 30 minutes yesterday.
Their profit, $800. But what about this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and the area's two other barrier islands, each with different rules on what you can do, as each tries to prevent the spread of the coronavirus? Charleston County Council Chairman Elliot Summey says he wishes they'd all adopt the same guidelines, but he's happy all area beaches are open to everyone. There had been talk of a lawsuit.
The problem we ran into was they were letting certain folks access it and certain folks not to.
While the governor issued an order allowing beaches to reopen, he left it up to the communities to decide. Some wanted to go about it more slowly, initially only allowing island residents. Summey says the county is working with local beaches to stay open and stay safe, especially this Memorial Day weekend. Nancy Grave and her kids have become early birds. They're off the beach by noon.
But it's getting definitely crowded down there, so I think keeping the social distancing is going to be hard.
Erica Robinette and her crew just arrived. They lucked out. The parking lot is full, but someone gave them a spot.
We might not be here long. We'll see.
We'll see might be the motto this Memorial Day weekend, as what is traditionally the unofficial start of summer looks to be anything but traditional.
Crowded beaches with people kicking up sand, walking through your setup, shaking off towels and throwing sports balls. Probably some loud people, too. Sign me up. Where can I sign up for this? This after you decide to park illegally on the median or somewhere in desperation after waiting an hour or two in traffic. This just sounds like relaxation to me. But folks, if you're going out, no shame. Do what you need to do, but practice caution. Dr. Linda Bell tells us about wearing masks outside in a moment. Just be cordial and, of course, wear sunscreen, you know, unless you think sunburns are a conspiracy. South Carolina's unemployment rate jumped to 12.1% in April from March's revised rate of 3.2%. The State Department of Employment and Workforce said this is the highest rate and the largest month-over-month increase in the history of the data series going back to 1976. Counties with the highest rates included Ouray County at 23%, Union at 18.5%, Marlboro at 17.5%, Cherokee at 16.4%, and Georgetown at 15.3%. All but 12 counties had unemployment rates in double digits. DOE Director Dan Elzey said in a statement that while South Carolina's high unemployment rate is shocking compared to the record lows we recently enjoyed, I'm sure that this news isn't a surprise to anyone. As the unemployment rate has increased dramatically to 12.1%, it is significantly less than the U.S. rate of 14.7%. This unemployment level reflects our state's careful, planned response to the COVID-19 pandemic in April. And this new unemployment rate came on the heels of the latest initial unemployment claim numbers for the week ending May 16th, which found 29,446 South Carolinians filing for unemployment insurance. While this continues the downward trend, statewide initial claims received since mid-March reached 515,595. Moving on, South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan has this report on a forthcoming public assistance program in Rock Hill.
At the end of February, the city of Rock Hill had an unemployment rate of almost 3%. As of this week, it's 15%, 21,500 people. A lot of that number comes from the city's small business community, and city officials are planning an ambitious public relief project aimed at getting businesses operating again. Mayor John Geddes addressed the plan at a meeting of city leaders Tuesday afternoon.
It's imperative that we get back to business. We can't sit back and wait on someone to say, okay, it's time, you can go back to work now. We have to start that process ourselves.
The city is set to vote on an $800,000 public assistance package on May 26th. If approved, the project would bolster food, childcare, housing, and utility assistance for out-of-work residents and provide low-interest loans to boost small businesses in the city.
Nearby in Greenville County, leaders there are beginning the process on what to do with $91 million the county received under the CARES Act. Due to its population, Greenville is the only county in the state to receive CARES Act money. just like how state leaders are refining a plan to use that $1.9 billion on COVID-19 expenses, so is the county, which said that not a dime will be spent until a plan is approved by council. And to close out our trip to Craft and Draft in Columbia last Friday, I had a chance to speak with a few folks about their current situations. One of them was Jeremy Bryant, a friend of the pod.
Tell us what gives you the confidence to be on the ballot right now.
Oh, come on, Jer. Jer Bear.
I don't even know if it's confidence.
Je ne sais quoi?
It is what it is.
C'est la vie?
Sure.
YOLO?
Yes, YOLO.
Jeremy, who works for a local liquor distributor, has been on what he calls a mini vacation since May 1st, when he was furloughed. He gives us insight on the dollar and cents of the ravaged bar scene.
So before that, off-premise was very busy, and then on-premise was basically non-existent. So we were furloughed May 1st, and the furlough continues.
What's it going to take to get back to where we were?
You know, if you think about the liter business that distributors and suppliers have lost because of on-premise being closed, it's a great deal of profit that I'm not sure how we're going to make up. You know, like if you go like down to Charleston, like King Street's dead, but then like Shem Creek and Mount P's like crazy. So it's like, what's it going to take for King Street to open back up? But you know, King Street's kind of raucous, like 5 points. So it's amazing to me that they're not open yet. Like, because it's, I don't know. I was surprised that Mount P and Shem Creek is as busy as they are, and King Street's not. So I think the consumption is high right now.
Yeah.
Which is good for business.
When's your busiest season? Is it spring, summer?
No, normally, so the way that we look at calendars, OND, October, November, December, is 50% of the business for our fiscal year.
Damn!
So, yeah, basically you think about, like, October starts with Halloween.
Yeah.
And then November is, like, Thanksgiving, then December is Christmas and New Year's Eve, and then New Year's. And so, like, people are just going to parties, buying stuff, having cookouts, having family gatherings, so...
That's
this,
crazy.
This hasn't terribly eaten into the year-long revenue, the annual revenue in a sense.
To be seen. Like, I've heard quotes for leaders being down around $1 million, but, I mean, that's pretty substantial for a supplier, for a distributor. But, you know, some people like to argue that it's being made up in other sizes.
Thank you, Jeremy. Always good to catch
up. Oh, you can't see me, but cheers.
You're wearing a party animal shirt.
Yeah, party animal with Brew at the Zoo.
Brew at the Zoo is an annual event that features craft beer tasting, live entertainment, and unique animal encounters at the Riverbank Zoo, which is where Emma Blackman is the food and beverage manager. We spoke with her before the governor announced attractions like the zoo in West Columbia could reopen starting this Friday.
I don't prefer this. I'm not cut out for quarantine. I do miss the flying. I do miss the travel. I mean, we traveled a lot before COVID-19. I mean, we were on like 20 to 30 flights last year. So like we traveled a lot.
Brag.
Traveling now is driving. So wherever we can drive to, I feel like I'm comfortable with. But other than that, I'm not sure I'm ready to get on an airplane.
What's it going to take for you to get on an airplane, go to maybe a restaurant? Are you cool with restaurants? What are your thoughts on all these different things that we now have to adapt to?
I'm okay with restaurants. I prefer outdoor versus indoor. I don't know how I feel about retail stores just because there's not a great way to sanitize all the stuff that people touch. I go into retail stores and if it's clothes, I touch all the clothes. So how do you stop that? I don't know. I think really the thing that will make me feel the most comfortable is having a vaccine or having some way to test more frequently.
Therapeutics as well.
Yeah, right. Just like knowing that there's a way to stop it or at least control it in some way. I work at the zoo. It's actually required for us to wear masks at work. Just because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of animals, like there's just a lot of stuff going on there. So, I mean, we're ready. We have a plan. We have a very good plan to keep people safe. Got lots of great social distancing signage, zoo style, which is really cute.
Which is like Jurassic Park style, basically.
Yeah, like you should stay 6 feet apart, which is like two lowland gorillas, which is cool. Like they've done a really good job getting the park ready for people to come back in and be safe.
Prime time for families to be coming to the zoo.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like it's been wonderful weather this spring.
Yeah.
And you've probably just been biting your tongue because it's just been so nice out and people just can't get out. family's the same way.
Yeah, daily. I used to daily check the weather, like, multiple times a day because I needed to know what was going to happen every hour because of my job. But I've stopped checking the weather, and it's been beautiful, and we've had, like, the best spring weather ever, which is kind of a bummer that we've been closed. But I think once we get the gates back open and people know that it's safe and they're comfortable, then I think we'll be ready for them.
I just want to point out that social distancing did not work in Jurassic Park and everyone died.
That's very true. He has a valid point.
Everyone died.
Maybe we should
not all die.
A lot of them died.
Once I got the system back online, because it's a Unix system, which I know.
The Riverbank Zoo reopened on Saturday with some changes, like requiring visitors to reserve tickets ahead of time and to stagger arrival times. And remember, only you can prevent forest fires. I mean, the spread of COVID-19. On the medical front, we heard from state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell earlier this week on how the state's plan to test some 220,000 people over May and June is going. She said DHEC has completed phase one of universal testing at nursing homes, and complete testing of nursing homes is to be finished by the end of this month. As for wearing masks, Dr. Bell gave some recommendations on when and where to wear one and how contact tracing has been going.
As the governor said, the mask is needed if you're going to be in close contact with somebody. So if you're out on a beach and you're not in close contact with someone, then you don't need to wear a mask. If you're outside exercising or taking a run or something like that, then you don't need to wear a mask. But in any setting, whether it's inside or outside, if you're going to be in close proximity for a period of time more than a matter of a few minutes, then it's recommended to wear a mask, because you can't predict when you might encounter somebody who could be spreading the virus, who may not be having symptoms. So the mask is an extra measure of protection in addition to the recommendation to maintain social distancing. The contact tracing has been very successful. Contact tracing is a measure that we in public health use for a number of communicable disease conditions. We do contact tracing for people who may have hepatitis or sexually transmitted diseases, tuberculosis. So this is a measure that we employ all the time. And we have done this throughout this outbreak for every case of every reported case of COVID-19 that we could identify, that we could find. Those individuals are interviewed, and they're asked confidentially about who they might have come in close contact with. And then we follow up with those close contacts. We don't say in what setting they may have been exposed, but we provide recommendations to them about what they can do to monitor for symptoms and to prevent spread. And so those measures have been very successful. Now, the volume of cases that we will be looking at now, we're very fortunate to have a much larger workforce to help with that contact tracing and to continue those measures that we've had in place all along.
And just a reminder, DHEC is not coming to quarantine you, but continues to urge people to use personal responsibility to limit the spread of COVID-19, especially if you have the virus. And we have an update on how the state is trying to fight the virus. South Carolina has received doses of the drug remdesivir, which has been shown to shorten the recovery time from COVID-19. The Gilead Sciences drug is still in phase 3 testing, but has received special approval from the Food and Drug Administration to be used experimentally in treating the virus. Gilead is donating 940,000 doses of the drug to the U.S. government for allocation to states. South Carolina initially received enough doses to treat 66 patients. DHEC worked with the South Carolina Hospital Association and a volunteer panel of ethicists and experts from around the state to develop an ethically principled process based on available medical information to determine how the initial supply of remdesivir was distributed. Using this process, physicians requested remdesivir for 59 patients around the state. DHEC received additional doses of the drug, which will be distributed using the same allocation process. And if you want or need a test, you can get one without a doctor's referral. You can find testing locations and so much more information on accelerate.sc.gov. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you still going to work? Are you getting a haircut? How long do you have to wait to get a haircut? Or do you like your long hair now? tell us, 803-563-7169. This is our new reality that we're living in, so let us know what it's like for you at 803-563-7169. And the lead says, Happy Memorial Day. Please take a moment this weekend to reflect on those men and women who gave the ultimate sacrifice to make this country great over the past 243 years. And you can watch the National Memorial Day concert on your local SCETV station Sunday at 8 p.m. And just to wrap up our conversations from our trip to Craft and Draft last week, here's me talking with Tony about her current situation.
My name is Tony.
Toenail.
Tony, you have a little baby here. You have a baby here. Your husband wants to talk to us.
She is very unhappy right now. She got shots yesterday, and she wanted to kill me earlier. So, you know, the life of a child.
What's it been like being a mom of a how many month-year-old?
She is almost 8 months, so 7.5 months right now. I think the hardest thing is I work in the healthcare field, and so for me, I don't want to touch anything in my home or touch my child when I come home. So I do pick her up, but I do not really interact with her at all until I literally get home. My husband's there, I drop her off, and I actually shower every time I interact with anybody at work. So, you know, it can stay on your clothing, and obviously we're touching patients all day long, so it's intense because you don't want to take anything home, but you also want to help patients every single day. So it's scary and, you know, but you can't kind of like live in fear when you work with patients. We have
seen lots of people all the time.
Yeah, and right now it's a lot of like admin for the managers, but we are doing a progressive reopening, and that's difficult for people with families, and it's hard for patients to understand. We're treating them one-on-one now, and obviously we're kind of mindful of social distancing, but I mean, they can't even sign paperwork, and so everything's it's a different flow within our company, and it also affects, you know, what patients are able to come in. We really don't allow over 70 to come in anymore. And a lot of our patients, especially like our Medicare side of patient care, is limited. We also have people who are immunocompromised and still have to have surgery. So it puts them in an awkward and fearful situation being around others.
Have you, like, besides work, I mean, like, what's it been like? How have you scaled back, perhaps? Like, what's going to take for you to go back to, like, life as normal? Like, this is, we're outside right now, but like, are you going to go back to a restaurant? I mean, I know you still have a child, but like, you know, what's it going to take for you to like get back to where you were before and be comfortable about things?
We actually probably only interacted with one other couple in the last 2 months in our home. And it's kind of like a trust thing. And the only thing you can really think of is they were quarantined and we were kind of quarantined to the house. And so we did not physically touch or interact with our parents, you know, so obviously grandparents want to see their grandchildren, and my mom and my husband's mother like haven't seen our little baby in probably 2 months now. So and we're not really Skype people, so obviously that's come into our kind of our repertoire of things that we do with the family. But even now it's like, all right, here's a picture, here's a movie. Or really now I don't want to go to restaurants. I'm definitely not going to take her anywhere where I don't know either the staff or the people that are there. And I kind of avoid people like the plague. I haven't been to the grocery store in probably 2.5 months. It sounds so stupid, but obviously I think like when H1N1 was around, like I worked in the hospital. I've had TB patients like cough directly in my face without a mask on and never cared. And obviously I have her now and I have to worry about, you know, a little meat sack that has to live, and I want her to. So it's a lot different than it used to be. I think it's hard because I am a working mom and my husband is working at the same time. And despite him being home, it is impossible to work with a baby. And so she continues to go to daycare. I'm sure some people could hate me for that, but at the same time, like, we both really have to kind of work and, you know, provide for our family and our child and our lifestyle. And so I think that it's a choice we make to bring her there. She's encountering other kids. I don't know where their parents have been. You have to put faith that they're going to take good care of the facility and clean. it's crazy because even pulling up to the daycare, they're like, we don't have wipes, we don't have Lysol, we don't have hand sanitizer. And there's a donation thing where you can actually bring that. And so the parents are bringing Lysol from home, bringing wipes from home, bringing hand sanitizer from home, and anything that we've had extra, bringing it to the daycare for every family so we can keep all of our kids safe while they're there.
Interesting insight there from Tony. We appreciate that. And AT, what's going on with you? How's your week been going? We got the weekend here. What's new?
Well, I know that you watched a very bad movie, right?
I did. I'll share that.
Soon. Would you like to tell us about it?
Just a little 1990s flick, a wild plot, stealing nuclear bombs, John Travolta, Christian Slater. Howie Long. I mean,
Howie
my
Long,
God.
Maybe.
What's that one guy? Gary Busey. What was he doing? Like, why didn't they have him in there somewhere? Maybe he's like, if he couldn't be John Travolta, he couldn't be in the plot.
What a set of chompers on
that
Gary
movie.
Busey.
That movie we're talking about, Broken Arrow.
Fantastic stuff.
Now, there have been Broken Arrows in America, but not like this, at least that we don't know of.
Not this fabulous.
But there was a Broken Arrow in South Carolina. Did you know this?
You tell me, please.
The year was, let me see, it was in 1958?
Picture this.
A picturesque PD farm in Mars Bluff, 5 miles from Florence. Flying overhead, an Air Force bomber. A 30-kiloton bomb drops onto the Mars Bluff community on March 11th, 1958. Luckily, one dies, but the TNT trigger from the bomb blew a crater into Walter Gregg's garden, 24 feet deep, 50 feet wide. Moral of the story is, lock up those nukes.
And don't mess with John Travolta. Was this his first turn as being a bad guy?
I don't know when Face Off was.
Face Off, I think, was after Broken Arrow. But that was all to say. This was all just a setup. So you told me you watched a bad movie.
Face Off 97. So
I had to mash your bad movie. And I watched Bangkok Dangerous with Nicolas Cage from 2008. It's fabulous, fabulous.
Mm.
It's very strange. You can tell they were going for this sort of Leon the Professional type vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up getting like an assassin mercenary messed up How Stella Got Her Groove Back or Eat, Pray, Love going on. And it really messes with you. And I told my friends on my group chats that I was watching it. And they were like, what kind of Nick Cage? How intense is he? And I was like, zero intensity. He's very, very uncharismatic and just bored the whole time. And he lights a lot of stuff on fire. And my favorite line was, you don't pull the trigger, you squeeze the trigger.
God. Yeah, there were some moments like that in this one. And can I just say, can we just talk about the Venn diagram that we're creating right now? We have Travolta and Nick Cage, mm-hmm. and in the middle is Face Off.
Face Off, I know. We did our own little Face
both?
Off.
I mean, we just, oh, wow. 97
the world
was Face
wasn't
Off.
Ready. The world
Nick
wasn't
Cage
ready
was
for
a terrorist.
Face Off.
Travolta was an FBI agent. Swipe. Kooky stuff happens, just like Multiplicity.
I remember to keep the prisoners in the jail in Face Off, the floor was hyper magnetized.
<That's right. laughs> some supermax prison guys were like, what? We don't even have that stuff here. Like,
we can't even close our doors.
Weren't they on an oil rig too?
I don't even remember, but I do remember the world wasn't ready for John Woo's Face Off.
Yeah, this is years before the face transplants became a thing.
Or
before they wanted us to know it was a thing. I mean, geez, based on a true story.
I love Conspiratorial Gavin. That show changed you on Netflix. Yeah. Hanger One.
Hey, baby, let me tell you about the theories.
Hey, baby, you ready for some truth? Come on.
Well, if you have some truth to share it with us at 803-563-7169. We always want to hear it from y'all. And we appreciate you guys sending us messages. We'll get to them. We got a few that we're going to get to next week. So keep sending them to us. We appreciate hearing from you guys. And again, thanks for tuning in the pod. You can keep up with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Now, once you get your fill of news, take a break. Go outside. It's nice out. It's starting to get humid. It's starting to get hot, but we can still go outside. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest news. And we'll also let you know if the governor's having a press conference. They're coming, they're a little bit few and far between these days, but when they happen, we'll let you know. And we carry them on SCE TV and Southcom Public Radio stations, usually around 4:30 p.m. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this week, and as this situation continues to develop, we're in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. I'm not going to be reporting on anything, buddy. I'm on vacation, pal. It's just the weekend, baby.